I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, February 28th. The time is 3:31 p.m. Committee members present today, Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Michicki, and myself, Senator Giesel. Excused, Senator McGuire and Senator French. I believe Senator Dyson will be joining us shortly. In the audience today, we have Senator Coghill, who will be presenting in just a minute. Recording Secretary is Ann Kreckelberg. Juno LIO teleconferencing is Thatcher Brower. Welcome, Senator Dyson. Thanks for joining us. And my staff, Lindsay Williams, is assisting us. So on today's agenda, we have SB 105, Quitclaim Land to the U.S., and Governor's Appointment to Commissioner of DNR, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and Board of Fisheries. So our first item is Senate Bill 105, Quitclaim Land to the U.S. Senator Coghill is the sponsor, and he's here along with his staff, Reneva Moss, to present the bill. So please come forward. Welcome, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Chair Giesel, and thank you for the ability, the privilege of presenting this bill before your committee and committee members. We gave a bill packet to you that will help you kind of keep some of the stuff in order. It's a simple aim in a very complex world, and so I'm not going to say this is a simple bill, which you hear way too often probably. But the simple aim is to settle a long-standing agreement between natives and Americans and now Alaskans. The aim is to settle allotments that have been promised well over 100 years now. And the Alaska can be a help in settling some of the title questions. There's several things that strike me very personally here. One of them is I was raised with several people who have either been involved in, claimed, or have been refused native allotments. So I know a little bit about it. I know a lot of people who had other claims that the federal government, including homesteads. The homesteads were given fairly easily, fairly rapidly, while many of native allotments that had the same promise left languishing. Sometimes by BLM, sometimes because of people just not understanding how to assert their right. Sometimes people changed places in their life. So, but this is a long-standing issue. One of the other principles that I have to touch on that helps me get my shoulder to this is a, not only a promise by the federal government and something the state can be a part of, but this is private land. This is stuff that was given to people privately. And in Alaska, we don't have much private land. And so I would love to see the natives who had these allotments potentially given to them get settled. Probably the other principle that I keep thinking of as I travel down SB 105 is in the state of Alaska, we are going to have title problems on all kinds of land issues between the federal government and the state government. These should be settled before we start settling some of those other issues. So to me, it's a priority issue. It's not only a belated promise. It's a real issue that I think if we're going to move forward, I think in good economics in Alaska as well as goodwill in Alaska, this is one of those things we could and should settle. So Senate Bill 105, takes what is an existing right potentially and asserts it. And if you'll look at the last page of the bill, I'll show you kind of where the operative lever is in this particular issue. And it is to quit claim an interest in the land, which is on page 4 line, you'll see a sub 14. Wrongfully, erroneously conveyed by the federal government to the state. That's where the state really becomes involved, is in title selection. We have over-selected, but the fact is, at statehood, we are given the right to select lands. But it's also true that prior to that, we're given families the right to select land, and under this native allotment. Probably the only other thing that you should know that is new in this world is they've already had the ability to transfer land under our Department of Natural Resources at all here, but what we're doing is we're making it directive now. You shall. And I think that's going to be probably the new wrinkle in this. To be fair, there are allotment lands that have been probably erroneously transmitted to the state of Alaska that now have buildings sitting on them. And so you're going to hear testimony about those places where it's very difficult to transfer that land. But I think you're also going to hear some very compelling testimony that says there's a lot of land that we could settle. And probably the reason I think it's important for us to settle them now, and one of the other principles is families are dying and they're dispersing. Until they get this settled, they are moving out and away, and their claim is now becoming diminished significantly. And some of them fight even amongst their own progeny on who should have the right to that land. That should be a fight that probably could have happened within those families should they have gotten the land. Now they have to make the claim and agree together to make that claim. It just makes the complexity just that much more difficult. So I appreciate you hearing it. You're going to hear probably a lot of testimony. There is an operative that you will have in your book that is at the back. It's the Aguilar decision. You're going to hear it referred to from time to time. It's a court case that sets some standards on the dispersion of this land. So I don't.
That's behind tab 8.
It's in tab 8. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm getting way ahead of my staff here. I just wanted you to know that we've given you kind of the landscape of what I think is a very simple focus and a very complex thing that we have to do. And I'm trying to drive home those things that we can do, we should do. And at this point, I'm willing to say we must do. And with that, I'll have Reneva maybe fill in any of the blanks that I messed up. So,
for the record, Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. I was just going to go through the tabs with you. Tab 1 is the sponsor statement. Tab 2 is the bill itself, and I'll just quickly go through this. I'm going to start with Section 4, because Section 4 is the repealer of the statute that makes the conveyance permissive, and then go back to Section 1, which mandates that if it's wrongfully or erroneously titled to the state would quit claim it back to BLM so that it can be titled to the allotment owner. And then Section 2 and Section 3 are just provisions that A, ensure subservice rights to that allotment property, and B, that that land will not be designated as agricultural land. There will be no restrictions for the use on the land. And that is the substance of the bill.
Excuse me, Reneva, pause for one moment. Senator Fairclough had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How was erroneously arrived at?
Erroneously is arrived at because someone else had a claim to the property prior to BLM deeding the land to the state of Alaska. And actually, in the Aguilera case, they even preserved that even further because they said that a native's use of an allotment took priority over land selections made to the state of Alaska under the Alaska Statehood Act.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I could maybe add a little bit of clarity to it. Many of these were being processed by BLM and were under temporary authorization when Alaska was doing the land selection. One of the things that failed to hit the trigger point was a native allotment is a valid existing right. And I think that's what we're asserting here. And I think as you hear the testimony, you're going to see that become more and more clear. But it, like I say, it's a complex issue because some of those sat in BLM. Some were given to the state. You're going to hear some very interesting stories about how applications sat on desks and were shuffled between the state and the federal government. And what we're seeing is that right or wrong, obfuscating or not, many of these people got into a bureaucratic and we're trying to say, no, the existing right existed. And so that means we have to reach back into something that was in error.
Very good. Follow-up, Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said the state overselected, and so we were at statehood given a particular amount of land for state selection. Is that correct?
Just over 103 million acres.
103 million acres?
Yeah, about that.
And so we have we received that?
No. We're about 5 million short, Madam Chair, through the chair. But we have we have selected significantly more than what was allotted because of the ability to trade land, adjustments for uses, mountaintops. There's been a whole, and Madam Chair, probably would be best to let DNR explain why that might be. I could probably put my foot in my mouth on that one pretty fast.
Okay, great. We'll have DNR up in a few minutes. Yes, Senator Fairclough, further follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm just trying to reconcile if we've over-selected. Setting aside native allotment and accepting that we've done our due diligence and we understand that we have lands that belong to someone else or that there's at least an encumbrance that has to be worked through or transferred, however we need to make it right. But I'm still perplexed on the over-selection if we have 5 million acres that we haven't received from the federal government. So we've over-selected that much.
Right.
That
and I think Senator Dyson had in his committee, Madam Chair, an actual presentation on what that selection process was. They hold in reserve about 5 million acres. A lot of it has to do with the right-of-way. For example, the pipeline is one of those. But there has been over-selection because there has been ways to modify native lands, federal lands, state lands, the need for, because conservation units have changed, and now I'm getting right on the edge of my knowledge, but I know much of it has been selected because there might be projected state uses that maybe we would negotiate with the federal government on lands, and once again, DNR probably could probably round that out much better than me.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Last question, and then I'll wait to hear from the public. I don't see a fiscal note, but I see a finance referral. And when I have done minimal searching on this particular issue as far as the federal transfer to the state of our remaining allotment, one of the challenges that I was told from DNR or those that work at DNR was that any transfer had to be surveyed. And so the federal government really didn't have the dollars to survey the property that was in question, and that was somehow holding up some of the transfer that we were waiting for. And so I'm wondering, inside of this bill, when we move from may to shall, then are we going to have a call on the legislature to fund all of that land, or will it be a slow call that will slowly try to make everything right? I just wondered if there's a financial implication that we haven't seen yet.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, that is a policy call that very well may be made by you, because it's quite possible that a portion of these native allotments are not with their proper owner because they haven't been surveyed by BLM, and they have to be surveyed by BLM before they can give title.
And Madam Chair, just to give another backdrop to that, many of these have been in the making since the 1930s. And the responsibility falls on us now. It's going to be it may very well be part of the cost responsibility. I think we need to explore that, though, very thoroughly, and I'm willing to do that.
So
there may be ways to, I'm sorry for interrupting, Madam Chair, but there may be ways that we can negotiate our way through some of these things, but it needs to be put on the table for a lot of good reasons, but a lot of good people is the reasons.
Mm-hmm. Marty Parsons with the Division, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water is on the line and probably can answer these questions. Marty, are you there?
I am, Madam Chairman.
Great. Have you heard the questions from Senator Fairclough?
I have.
And could you address them, please?
I'll do my best. The over-selection of land is semi-complicated. As Senator Coghill mentioned, we were provided a certain amount of entitlement under the Statehood Act, and that was amended through several pieces of federal legislation, the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act being one, and the Alaska National Interest Land Act being another one, ANILCA. Each one of those provided us an opportunity to select additional lands, and in ANILCA we were allowed to over-select by a certain amount, and that was because some of our selections were rejected because they were set aside for the corporations to select the lands. The state came back and said, wait a minute, this was really important to us, so we want to be able to cover those selections. And so the federal government allowed us to select by 25% over our entitlement. So that sets out there on lands that have public land orders that would keep the state from selecting or having that land conveyed to it, or lands that were set aside for the corporations to select. As their entitlements are completed, our top filings, those selections that are made that sit out there waiting for the underlying selection to be adjudicated and either relinquished or rejected, goes away, and then ours falls into place. So that's kind of the mechanics of the over-selection. Have I totally confused everybody?
You're good.
I think it's pretty good. Any follow-up questions, committee members?
Madam Chair.
All right. Yes, Senator Coghill.
Relay one other principle that I kept in mind as I was going into this discussion, and those who are going to testify will be able to confirm that from time to time I wandered out off of good sound ground and they had to bring me back. But one of the principles was making sure that we did not restrict good access in Alaska. And to be fair, RS-2477 is probably one of our best tools, but it's becoming one of our weaker tools. And so as I appeal to those who this land would belong to, proving RS-2477 is hard and it's sometimes very contentious. There's probably going to have to be a protocol for some of these set up that is outside of the RS-2477. But quite frankly, I think that's true with the state, the feds, and native landowners generally anyway. So because, once again, it's like the people who have the right to these entitlements of allotment have been promised them for over a century. And our RS-2477s are getting cold by two centuries. And so, and we were supposed to assert them at a drop-dead time in the 70s, and the people who used those in our lifetime, and for those who were our mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers, they're no longer able to help us assert those. So records are getting harder to keep. But it's also true for allotments. So I hope you would keep that in mind as we go through this, that the principle of access is one thing I keep in mind, plus that this is a long-standing problem that we're trying to solve.
Senator Coghill, you used a term that the listening public may not be aware of the definition. Can you define 2477?
Yeah, and RS-2477 is a federal law that carries that numerical, and I think it's a mining law that was way back in the 1800s, that said if you use that land, if you wanted access to public land and you could demonstrate it through private property, that you had the right of access through that property based on these old trails, if they were used for commerce or trade. And in Alaska, certainly dog sleds were probably the primary reason for doing that. But I think the Richardson Road that became the highway was a mud trail to begin with and finally became a highway, would be an RS-2477, for example. But there's also, you know, we're doing the Iditarod this week. From Nenana to Nome is a mail trail, and that is an RS-2477 as well.
Very good. Great examples. Any further questions, committee members?
I have one.
Oh, yes, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I haven't been able to nail it down, but of the I believe it, total parcels yet to be conveyed is, I want to say, was it between 300 and 100?
Madam Chair, if you go to tab 5, you see DNR's summary of the allotments. and they have 303 unsettled allotments.
Okay. And one follow-up, quick one.
Yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. What's an acreage in an allotment? Is there a...
Madam Chair, I couldn't give you specifics on that because they ranged from about 40 acres to 160 acres each. I can tell you that when the law was repealed in 1971, there were roughly 10,000 Alaska Natives that filed, and there were over 16,000 parcels of land. And that's because they could file on more than one parcel as long as it didn't total more than 160 acres.
Right. Yep. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Reneva, you were taking us through the tabs, and I think we got as far as number two.
Yes, Madam Chair. Number three is the sectional, which just explains the bill. Number four is a series of white papers that Tanah Chiefs has provided to us that will answer some of your questions about RS-2477, which was part of a Mining Act in 1866. We've also included in here a summary by Tanah Chiefs of the Aguilar case and a map that shows you where these native allotments are. Then on tab five, we have given you the report that we requested from DNR, doing a summary, and they've attached some maps showing some of the conflicting areas that they're grasping, trying to get settled so that they can convey land or offer land trades, which will be explained a little bit later. Tab six are resolutions from different organizations supporting the bill. Tab seven is the actual federal law, the Alaska Native Allotments. And then tab eight is the Aguilar case.
Very good. Anything else that you wanted to say?
I might just add that these native allotments that Senator Coghill is trying to get resolved have already been through a full series of steps that are required by BLM to be native allotments. And we'll have people that will explain those steps, but there's been a lot of time and money already spent on getting to the stage of certification by BLM. So these disputed lands have already been approved by BLM as native allotments.
Very good. Senator Bishop?
So would that mean that the survey is being completed?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, no. That does not mean the surveys have been completed. There probably are cases where the holdup is a survey.
Thank you.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure you can give us more light on the subject, and certainly the public will, but of the 303 allotments that have been transferred to the state of Alaska that should have recognized a native allotment, is the federal government then willing to make the state whole in the form of other acreage or cash for us to try to resolve the issues for our people?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, the state and BLM have entered into a memorandum of understanding for land swaps, to allow for land swaps for native allotments. However, the concern is that DNR have a real good reason for refusing to deed these native allotments. And we have asked them for a breakdown of all of these allotments so that we know exactly why each allotment hasn't been quit claimed.
Thank you.
And probably one other point, that the DNR, to their credit, is looking for land swaps that they can work with. For example, if a highway has been built through or some other public use has taken that land and made it not usable, whether it's a city's been built on it or a bridge is now installed on it. So there's probably things that they have done to give what they'd call a voluntary agreement of land swap. And to their credit, they're willing to do that, and I think that's another important element to this.
Very good. Good. Well, it looks like we have about eight people signed up to testify on it, so great. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm told that Thomas Tilden is in the room wishing to speak to the bill. Is that true? Oh, it is? Okay. That was on my notes. I've got the sign-up sheet here. It must be Tom Hoseth. All right, great. So what we'll do now is open public testimony, and first I'll go through the folks here in the room that have signed up to testify. And we are eager to hear your stories. At the same time, we still have three other items of business today. So I'll ask you to try to constrain your testimony to about 2 minutes. All right. Yes. All right. Welcome. And
5 minutes.
Oh, really? Oh, we'd be here quite a while, I'm afraid. But if you would identify yourself first for the record, your name and any affiliation. All right. Welcome.
My name is Tom Hossett. I'm the Deputy Officer at the Bristol Bay Native Association. BBNA represents 32 federally recognized tribes. And I have worked in the BBNA Realty Department since 1986. The Alaska Native Allotment Act of 1906 gave Alaska Natives the right to obtain legal title up to 160 acres of land that they used. The Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act was passed in December of 1971. 16 months or so before the act was passed, the word was out that ANCSCA would repeal the Allotment Act. Approximately 13,000 allotment applications were filed during this period. However, ANCSCA did not repeal pending applications. Initially, the BLM rejected the allotment applications if the land was located on land already selected by the state. This continued up until 1979, when in the case of Aguilar versus the United States, the federal court ordered the BLM to process the applications. The court ruled that the Alaska Native Allotment Act provided preference right, defeating all subsequent claims to the same land. There are several Interior Board of Land Appeal decisions that support that this preference right begins on the date the land is first used and occupied by the applicants, no matter what date the application is filed. Therefore, the current rule is allotment applicants is entitled to the land applied for if their use began before the state selected the land. And I'll jump forward to what Mr. Coghill spoke to. In an attempt to resolve certain Aguilar allotment cases that have been set aside, in late September 2013, the state and BLM announced that they entered into a memorandum of agreement which offers the optional relocation of certain Native allotment parcels from lands that were conveyed in error to the state onto other state-selected lands. In early December 2013, the BLM provided us with maps of about 8 million acres the state opened for relocations. BBNA has prepared a more detailed map for our region. I believe, along with other service providers, that the relocation option will not resolve Aguilar allotment cases because, one, they only are going to offer to certain cases this option, and number two, the allotment applicants will not want to relocate, possibly with a few exceptions. Senate Bill 105 offers a solution to resolve all Aguilar allotments that were determined valid by BLM. The bill will amend AS Alaska Statute 3805035, subsection A, to require the state to reconvey the land back to BLM upon BLM's determination that a Native allotment was used and occupied prior to the state. In conclusion, once these reconveyances are completed, Alaska will be in compliance with the Statehood Act, Alaska's Constitution, the federal court order in Aguilar versus United States, and the Alaska Native Allotment Act. Furthermore, the Department of Interior will not have to sue the state, which will save a large amount of time and resources. Finally, I'd like to go on record supporting Senate Bill 105 and would like to thank Senator Coghill for sponsoring the bill.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Fairclough has a question for you.
Thank you for coming out, Tom. I'm interested in the very end of your testimony. Well, I'm interested in all of your testimony, but it raises a question at the very end. So the state needs to reconvey back to BLM the land to resolve the issue. The state can't just give it the allotment directly.
No, they need to reconvey it back to BLM, and then BLM will issue a certificate to the allotment.
Follow-up, Senator Faircliff?
Madam Chair, I'm just BLM has limited resources at the federal level, so I can see the state resolving our side of the issue. We convey the land back to them, and then we're stuck in this catch-22 again where there's not resources to convey it back to the proper allotment.
Senator Coghill, I bet you have an answer.
Madam Chair, the term of art and the legal instrument is called a quitclaim deed. And so it was, what you do is you just release the claim, and then BLM is able to manage it from there.
Very good. Follow-up, Senator Faircliff?
Madam Chair, BLM has not been as quick to respond to other requests that we have made, quick claim or not. I just, if it's the only recourse that we have legally to accomplish the mission, I just hope that we're not setting false expectations if we... I hope BLM has the authority, once in receipt of the property, to be able to execute it as anticipated by the applicants who hold title or hold an interest in the property.
Well, Thank you. Yes.
In our region, the cases that are still pending, many of them have been surveyed already, so the process will not be such a long process.
Very good. Good. Further questions for Tom? Tom, it was excellent testimony, and if you would like to submit it in writing, what we do is attach it electronically to the bill so that as it progresses through, your words continue on with the bill. So if you'd like to do that, you can give it to me.
I'll do that because I skipped over some really important points.
I know you did. Thank you very much. All right, the next person in the room that signed up is Sheila Nikita. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the committee, Madam Chairman. I am Sheila Nikita. I work for the Bristol Bay Native Association. I'm a land management specialist, and I specifically work on native allotments in our region. I would like to... tell you a little about it. I have been working with native allotments for about 8.5 years, and what I mean by that is I assist the native allotment applicants through the process with the BLM and the state DNR. According to a BLM document that was received, I saw a copy, there are about 301 pending native allotments throughout the state of Alaska. 43 valid Aguilar allotments are located within the Bristol Bay service provider boundaries. This means that BBNA Land Management Services works with the applicants and their heirs because, as Tom and Senator Coghill stated, a majority of those heirs are deceased. They have their heirs. There are second heirs to that, and sometimes, you know, even third. But we do the best that we can for the people. When the BLM, we work with the BLM, they review and adjudicate the parcels of land that the native allotment applicants have applied for. Once they have determined that the claim is valid, if the land has been given to the state of Alaska erroneously, which I know she received the request for, the BLM will request the land be returned from the state DNR. This means that the state DNR will be following their generalized land conveyance policies, and They review the case that the BLM submits to them, although the case has already been determined valid, and the BLM makes sure that they do a survey before they submit the land to the DNR. This can be a very lengthy process, and like I said before, please note that the native allotment applicants and or heirs need to be in agreement with the state DNR. And in my experience, since I've been working, the native allotment applicants have died in this process. Their heirs are waiting. Their heirs have died. It's a very compelling, and when you're working down with the native allotment applicants and their people, and they come to you and ask what they can do, and we tell them that you need to apply to your legislatures. A compelling case in our region is a case of John Alexi, which is 83 years old. He died while he was waiting for title for his land. One of his heirs have died. The heirs have done everything the DNR and the BLM has asked, but unfortunately, the state declined to reconvey, and the future of this case is uncertain. And I feel that I support Senate Bill 105 because it would assist not only this case but other cases throughout the entire state to resolve the problem of the pending valid Aguilar allotments. Once again, I'd like to thank Senator Coghill for supporting the bill, and also thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and speak.
Thank you, Sheila, for your testimony. Any questions for Sheila? All right, not seeing any. Oh, Senator Faircloth?
Sheila, you did a great job.
Who is it, Senator Bishop? All right.
And one quick follow-up. How is BLM to deal with, or from your relationship?
I have a very good working relationship with the BLM, and they ask us for legal evidence, which we assist the native allotment applicants to provide.
Mm-hmm. Great. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Sheila. I was writing as quickly as I could. I think I heard you say that BLM has to determine if the claim is valid, and so that's what you were referring to Senator Bishop, that you try to find legal documentation that the land was used previously?
That the native allotment application is valid, it's timely filed, and that the native allotment applicant did have valid use and occupancy, exclusive use and occupancy.
Good. Follow-up, Senator Faircloth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sheila, does that mean that a long time ago that papers were filed, or does that mean that something active is happening now to reassert that claim? Do you have to find paperwork from a long time ago where someone timely filed an allotment, or are you providing new documentation to file?
No, we do not provide new documentation. We go ahead and follow up with documents that were originally filed to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, mm-hmm. the Native Allotment Applications. We do not file new ones, mm-hmm. or evidence that it was submitted to the BIA.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
The next person in the room is Lucy Weedman. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you. My name is Lucy Weedman. I'm the heir to the late John Alexi, who is my grandfather. At the age of 53, he had applied for his native allotment, along with some affidavits from two well-respected individuals of the community, confirming that my late grandfather had been using said selected property since 1930, which is a total of 83 years of documentation of use by my grandfather. Between the age of 10 and 12 years old, my grandfather brought me to his property. 4 to 6 years later, when I started traveling up to said property, I didn't realize that it was property I'd be inheriting. Thank you. My daughter was entering her preteen years was when I learned about said property, my native allotment, and we still use the property today. My grandfather had waited for title to be transferred to him, but it never happened. 32 to 33 years later, we three heirs, my aunt, my sister, and myself, and we had one more brother. I had one more brother. And my brother was working on it, asking questions about it. We had received one notice after another from the state of Alaska, DNR, and each heir, including myself, had complied with different kinds of conditions they stipulated on us, but yet they still went back and pulled it out from under us, which angered us, and it hurt, you know, because that land is like the blood vessels. It's our lifeline. 80-plus years this was going on since my grandpa had been using that property. Half of them years, my grandfather expected a title, and to date, we as the heirs have not yet received title to the property. We heirs of John Alexei are all very thankful to Senator Coghill for bringing this bill to you. And we thank him from the bottom of our hearts. And we support the bill of 105. Which would give the land back to BLM to convey back to us as the heirs. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. Lucy, before you go, so you have a legitimate claim then that's been filed. Maybe Sheila helped you with that. I mean, the paperwork is in, right?
Yeah.
And you're just waiting for this bill to pass so that this all can take place and you can get the land allotment. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So you've got a legitimate claim in. Good. Senator Fairclough, did you have a question? No.
Ma'am, Madam Chair, you were going there. A valid claim. So,
yes.
So BLM has approved the claim.
Very good. Other questions? Senator Machicki.
Just to have a comment for you, Ms. Weidman. I know this is very emotional for you, and I understand why after 83 years. It's very important that you testified, so thank you for finding the courage to be up here.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Lucy. Next person signed up is Desiree Duncan. Hi, Desiree. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Desiree Duncan, and I'm the Native Lands Manager with Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I have been working in our land department for 22 years. Tlingit and Haida represents the native landowners in the southeast region, and we have over 29,000 members, tribal citizens. I am also the co-chair of the statewide tribal working group, which represents over 100 tribes. All the members in our tribal working group support Senate Bill 105 because it is a solution to resolve all the old Aguilar allotment cases. The applicants or their heirs in our region and in the state have been waiting over 40 years to receive what's rightfully theirs, their land that they used and occupied. I would like to thank Senator Coghill for sponsoring this bill and thank you for the opportunity to comment. The next person that will probably be speaking is Marsha Hotch, and she is an heir to an allotment in Cluckwan.
Very good. Thank you, Desiree. Any questions for Desiree? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. Next is Martha Hotch. Martha? Marsha, pardon me. Welcome.
Sheesh. My name is Marsha Hotch. Achtwasigu ye in kahwaniki. Achlingatsai. Bunemti, you had to us up. Ach ish jidacha ya, ya. Thinget you tangi. I just want to honor my dad, Willie Lee, by sharing with you what he had given, passed on to me, was the language, Gunfchish. I am one of the heirs of the Willie Lee allotment. My dad, Willie, used the land since 1933. And in 1943, he had applied for the 160 acres. And in 1955, he was given the certificate of allotment of 111 acres. And the 40 acres was excluded. And there are documents where he inquired why was that excluded. And he was informed in 1958 that the 40 acres was given to the state. And when the Aguilar case came to be, the 40 acres was reinstated in, and it was one of the few that was approved during that case. And we, the heirs, are still waiting for the 40 acres. We use the Aguilar name, but I want you to know that Ethel Aguilar, she was my sister-in-law. She was a lady that loved to beat. She had dreams to build something on the allotment that she had applied for. She had dreams to take her grandchildren to that area and to teach them how she grew up. She's no longer with us. I want to thank Senator Coghill for sponsoring Senate Bill 105. And thank you all.
Thank you, Marsha. Before you go, any questions for Marsha? Marsha, I had one. So just for clarification, you're still waiting on the 40 acres.
Right.
But did your family, your grandfather, receive the allotment of the 111?
Yes, he did.
He did. Okay, great. So some partial. Positive things there, just 40 acres more. Further questions for Marsha? Great. Thank you so much, Marsha. And for everyone that's spoken, if you would like to turn in written testimony, your notes, we'd be happy to enter them into the record as well as what you said today. So thank you so much. Anyone else here in the room wishing to testify? I do have one more person online. No one else here in the room? Okay. Online, Eileen Grant is with us from Fairbanks Tenno Chiefs Conference. Eileen, can you hear us?
Yes.
Welcome. So if you'd identify yourself for the record and then give us your testimony.
Okay, my name is Eileen Grant. I'm an allotment specialist with Tenno Chiefs Conference, which represents 42 tribes I'm also co-facilitator of the State Tribal Working Group. I've been doing my job for approximately 12 years, and at Tanana Chiefs, I have approximately 70 pending valid agular allotments. And for most of these cases, the state of Alaska refuses to give the land back because they don't feel that they have to. They feel it's discretionary, and according to federal law that governs Native allotments, once the application has been found valid, BLM requests reconveyance, and the state should give the land back to its rightful owner. In their own language, once the state accepts land, it does so with the exception of valid existing rights. A Native allotment is a valid existing right. And the problems with a lot of these cases, and I'm probably going to repeat what Tom and Desiree and Sheila stated, once BLM requests reconveyance, it sometimes takes the state 20 years to respond, if they do at all. The few cases that they do give back, they've kept part of the land for things like section line easements, rights away, and they lose some rights to their land, the applicants do. And in most of these cases, the applicant has died because many of the cases are 40 to 100 years old. So now the heirs are waiting for their land. And if the applicant's use and occupancy started before the state selection, they should not have to give up any of the land. So in all of these cases also, the applicant and or the heirs have jumped through the hoops that they've been asked to, and I take phone calls all the time explaining to the applicants or the heirs what's going on, and it's getting harder and harder to comfort people as so many years go by. And a lot of people, a lot of applicants or heirs, don't even feel they have the right to use the land because they know they don't have the paper to it. They know they don't have a title. So Tanana Chiefs Conference and the 42 tribes that we represent highly recommend that this bill goes through, Senate Bill 105. And thank you very much to Senator Coghill for submitting it.
Thank you, Eileen, for your testimony. Any questions for Eileen? Looking at committee members? All right, not seeing any. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? There is no one else. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 105? All right, seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Senator Coghill, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think those who testified show the exceeding frustration of a couple of generations trying to lay claim to something. It's just frustrating. So I was willing to put my shoulder to it, knowing full well that an existing right had been promised that has never been able to finally be delivered. And I think we just have to push ourselves as a state to honor that where we can. And so knowing full well that the state certainly has conflicts, they're just going to have conflicts, but you have to have a mandate that makes something move along. And I think there's going to be solutions in the making. There will be land probably reconveyed. Certainly surveying is one of the barriers because there's a cost to it. But my expectation is if we all kind of put our shoulder to it, I don't know that one person has to bear the total cost of that. I think if we figure out ways that we can do that. So I'm willing to work on those ways. But what I'm not willing to do is to sit and let this languish any longer. And so, therefore, the language is a heavy-duty mandate. It's one thing that we've got to get settled before we can go on to the next big issues, and we do have some big issues coming our way. Once again, this is private land. It's subsurface land. There's definitely, you're going to hear that people are going to say, well, I can't get any, but they weren't promised it. These people were. And so I think what you do is you try to settle what you can before we can move on to the next level of discussion on boundary disputes between, we could have regional corporation disputes, we could have title between the state and federal government. We even have title disputes between state agencies. So, you know, but this is one that should be settled. If you want to juxtapose it against something that shows the exceeding unfairness of how our government has treated this, look at how many Homestead Act homes were actually put together in Alaska. They were all put together. And people received their Homestead Act if they did what they were supposed to. BLM conveyed that. The state honored it. And it has not been the case here. And so it's just time. And so I thought the testimony was going to be very important to show you kind of the personal side of it. The title side of it is a legal grand Gorgagian knot, or I said that wrong. But anyway, it's a complex issue. There's no doubt about that. But I think if we put the mandate on the state to move forward, maybe not all solutions will come. But if we can get people made whole where we can, I think we should. And so I'm probably not going to let up on this.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Did I hear you say that the subsurface rights go with the surface rights?
For the most part, yes. It's the way I understand it.
That's great. Very good. Senator Dyson had a question.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Why hasn't the state done this? And why aren't we having somebody from DNR come and explain the other side why this hasn't happened?
It's fine. My expectation that we'll have DNR in front of your committee. It was not my expectation that you would not hear them. So if it was my failure, my apologies to the committee. But I think DNR should be before your committee on this one. This is a complex issue that they're going to have to navigate. And they're not without their problems in doing this. So, like I say, there have been buildings, lands, bridges, all kinds of things. And now we have them in our own state park systems, you know, where we may have designated that land for something. But those are problems that are solvable, in my view, if you keep looking at the valid existing right. And so you have to kind of keep working through those. The issue has been brought to the state of Alaska before, and the language that we had in statute said that they should settle them, but it was not mandate. It was given the permissive language with the expectation that they would move through deliberately on them. And just as any agency, they have, just like we do in the legislature, we often have the urgent and the important, and they're not always the same. And this has now become urgent and important, I think.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Dyson, a few minutes ago we had Marty Parsons on. I believe he's probably still on the line. He's from the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Land, Mining, and Water. Would you like to ask him the question again?
Yes.
All right.
And Madam Chair, are you planning on...
I'd hope to, but we'll get these questions answered. Mr. Parsons, are you still on the line with us?
I am, Madam Chairman.
All right. Senator Dyson, would you reiterate your question for clarity?
Yeah, please. My questions are not pejorative. What has kept the state from the DNR from doing these things that have been permissive for a long time?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, DNR has continually worked these issues and these files. We have a couple of members of our staff that work these on a regular basis. Many times it's an iterative process back and forth between BLM and the state. In many cases, we have resources, we have roads, we have other items that have been either predate the use and occupancy of a particular allotment that we then need to make the allotment subject to those. Under the Aguilar Supreme Court case, we have a settlement release process that we go through where either the allottee or the heirs, if we don't reconvey 100% of the bundle of sticks back to the federal government, who would then give it to the allottee, then we need to have that settlement and release documents signed by the allottee or their heirs. In many cases, we've had settlement releases setting out for 10, 15, 20 years that have not been signed and returned, and we continue to work with those individuals to try to get those documents signed. It's not that we haven't worked them. In many cases, it's just an iterative process back and forth between BLM and the state and the allottee and the service providers, trying to reach agreements on what the reconveyance will be subject to.
Senator Dyson, follow up?
No, I appreciate the situation you're in. If you had five times as many people working just these issues, could you clear them up in 5 years?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I'm not sure if we have staff dedicated, so I'm not sure that more staff is the answer. One of the things that we have to look at is when land comes to the state, whether erroneously conveyed or not, we have a process that statute requires we go through, which includes a public process and a finding to reconvey or dispose of land. Many cases there will be information brought up that is in conflict with the allottee, and then at that point the state has to work through the process of determining whether there's another interest that we need to protect from the state standpoint before we give it back to the BLM, and then they could give it to the allottee. In many cases, there's third-party interests that we need to work with. You have bona fide purchaser that has purchased land when the state had title to it, maybe before the state even knew that the allotment was in place. We now have those rights that we need to protect.
Yeah, Mr. Parsons, I understand, and I suspected that there were lots of really practical issues that are tough to do. Is there anything we can do that to eliminate some of the state laws that inhibit your getting these things resolved? Or should we do?
Well, Senator Dyson, through the chair, at this point I can't think of a lot of things that we could do as far as changing statutes that would expedite it.
Okay.
I know our staff tries to work consistently and quickly through these issues. The unfortunate part is because many of these allotments the land came to the state before the state knew the allotment was in place.
I understand.
Decisions were made.
All right. So there's nothing that we can do to eliminate the barriers. More resources don't make it happen. And it seems to me like the numbers are 400 or 500 or 600 pieces here that have gone on for a long time. And I'm really sympathetic to the situation you're in, but it seems intolerable. And it sounds like what Senator Coghill's doing here and telling you got to do what you already could do isn't going to make any difference, because the practical, administrative, and complicated issues are going to have you too blocked on this one, too.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, one of the things that the state has attempted to do is, through the agreement that we reached with BLM, was to allow an allottee, voluntarily, would be to take a parcel of land that was in it's a legislatively designated area that the legislature has set aside and now is for certain public purposes. They could take that 160 acres and move it in an area that they found acceptable to them on state selected land, which is still owned by the federal government. It's a much simpler and more straightforward process, and we understand that
Mr. Parsons,
50%, 100% of the people who are interested in that, but it is a voluntary process, so we are trying to work creatively to find solutions to this to move it forward.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Parsons.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Any other follow-up, Senator Dyson?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions from committee members for Senator Coghill or the Division of Mining, Land, and Water? All right, seeing none. Senator Coghill, you know, you and I are both born and raised Fairbanks kids, and I sincerely appreciate you doing the work on this. I'm thrilled, actually, this may sound odd, but the subsurface rights would go to these property owners as a legacy. So thank you. All right, I will entertain a motion. Senator Dyson?
This motion comes from a frustrated member of your committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 105, version 28-LS0849/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 105, version 28-LS0849/A will move from this committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal document. Thank you. Call Senate Resources Committee back to order. We now have some governor's appointments to deal with. First one will be Joe Balash, who is an appointee for the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. So, Commissioner Balash, welcome. Please come forward, and if you want to review your relevant experience and your interest in serving as a Commissioner of DNR.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Balash, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Natural Resources. And for a Friday, this sure feels like a Monday, and that didn't help. But that said, my belief is that DNR is the premier agency in this particular state and state government. It's a real honor and privilege for me to be able to serve my fellow Alaskans in this capacity. The professionals that we have that manage our resources across the various divisions, they really have a day-to-day job of dealing with the nitty-gritty individual permits, individual authorizations, and decisions. And we rely on them to manage the resources that we have, be it timber, minerals, oil and gas, or parks and outdoor recreation. And that's a huge order. We have world-class assets here, and it requires world-class management from those professionals. And I view the job of the commissioner's office as one to not manage the resources per se, but rather to manage assets. And I see that distinction as one that if we're going to maximize the value for the benefit of our people, really does require us to look for the opportunities to leverage one asset off of another to improve and increase the value of both. A couple of examples that I think are worth pointing to and help maybe illustrate a little bit of my personal approach here is with regard to our state parks. We have the largest state park system in the nation. That's something that I think we can all be proud of. But the real shame is that we have a $60 million deferred maintenance backlog in those parks. And, you know, those are facilities, equipment that Alaskans use to enjoy the opportunity that we have here. And yet we have all this land in beautiful country, beautiful opportunities, where if we put a little bit of thought, a little bit of planning into it, we can leverage the innate value in those places to create revenue streams that can go and take care of those particular backlogs, those deferred maintenance problems. And a specific example of that would be the efforts to develop South Denali. There's incredible demand to see North America's largest peak, and there fundamentally has to be an opportunity there. And I think through the leadership of the MATSU delegation, we're seeing the first start at development of the lower end of that particular park and area. But in the longer term, there's a commercial opportunity, a concession, that can be structured in a way to ultimately preserve our ownership interests there, but leverage the commercial opportunity that the tourism industry provides. And if we do it smartly, if we do it thoughtfully, I think we can create additional value to keep in the park system and benefit not just the people who visit that particular park, but parks throughout Alaska. I don't think that's our only opportunity, though. You look at the size and scope of the Chugach State Park. I think there's got to be an opportunity there to further advance visitor industry opportunities and partnerships. And as you move out beyond the core rail belt area, the Wood Tick Chick Park is incredible. And if I think if we take a little time, put a little thought into it, we can identify additional leveraging opportunities. So that's just with parks. Many of you know I've worked on oil and gas issues here for my most recent assignment in the department. And what we did with the oil tax legislation reform last year is an opportunity to leverage our existing proven resource to provide additional development, additional investment to recover ultimately more barrels. I think we were able to show that just within the proven resource base, we've got something on the order of 3 billion barrels proven reserves in the ground. And depending on your rate of decline, you potentially could strand more than 1 billion barrels in the ground because it no longer is efficient and economic to produce all those barrels. So I think thinking about the overall value proposition, not short-term but long-term, is really the way to maximize the opportunities. And I think that's what we're doing on the gas front. We are providing an opportunity by committing ourselves, hopefully, to a long-term commercial arrangement that will result in the largest, most efficient development of natural gas on the slope. And so I'm really eager to see opportunities like that that come not just from the top down, but I encourage the employees from the bottom up to bring opportunities. You know, we all have org charts, we all have a chain of command, so to speak, but I've been encouraging our staff to recognize that the 14th floor in the Atwood building has an open door and not be afraid to call on the folks who happen to work up there. Because at the end of the day, we're all working together and we're all working for the betterment of the people of our state. And, you know, before, well, just to wrap up, my age is something that I've seen a few people express concern about, and I certainly can appreciate that. But one thing I hope that Alaskans understand is that I know I'm young enough that I will live to see the consequences of every decision I make. And that's something that weighs very heavily on the decisions as I'm contemplating whether to go with a particular development project, a particular easement, and it's something that I look forward to continuing if the committee and the larger body is prepared to confirm my nomination.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. Questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Bishop.
Commissioner Balash, you know, you made an opening comment that you have the privilege of leading the premier one of the premier agencies in the state, and I'd just like to say that that's debatable, but we're at my old job, but I'll yield to the DNR commissioner on that point on a dollar for dollar value. But I just want to ask you one question here, and then I got one follow-up. And you know, you're one of the state's leads moving the state forward on a world-class civil and pipeline construction project. On the scale of TAPS and larger, and how do you sleep at night knowing that that balance hangs in your is in your hands? And I'm not worried about your age.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I don't always sleep well. It's something that wakes you up in the middle of the night or gets you up extra early. This morning, 4 a.m.
Thank you. Further questions? Yes, Senator Faircliff.
Welcome. In a personnel interview, no one's allowed to ask about age, so that sounds like age discrimination from sitting on that side of the table. So I hope that you know that that's not the case, at least at this table. We received some news today as Alaskans that our federal government has once again decided that Alaska can't do for itself and that somehow they are managing yet another preemptive strike at Alaska's ability to go forward with responsible resource development. It's hard to say it's irresponsible when you don't know what the plan is. One thing I admired about the previous commissioner was he was an attorney, and he knew how to assert our legal rights. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are right now, sitting in that same seat, about some of the things that are happening to Alaska and how you would protect and defend Alaska from federal overreach. Not necessarily the specific project that we heard about today, but in general, what will be your counsel to the governor when these things happen that affect your department?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Faircliff. The challenges that we face almost every day in dealing with federal agencies and how they affect our department is one that you could very easily become numb to. And it's something that I've seen in certain cases my line staff have become numb to. And it's something that cannot be tolerated from the people in positions such as mine who hold the responsibility of maintaining Alaska's maximum discretion to wield the assets that we have here, the land, the water, and the resources. The real challenge, I think, that a non-attorney has in this particular position is just that, being a non-attorney. I think my predecessor was able to assert arguments with our own Department of Law at times that weren't always comfortable or not always well received. And it's something that I think actually is a rather common challenge or frustration among departments, and none more so than in my own. Certainly, the zeal to bring challenge, to question, to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves is something that I carry with me, and make sure to press when opportunities are presented. I think there is a real need, however, for some specialized legal talent and counsel on these topics, and one that in some ways, you know, my own thoughts are that it would best help my department if they were actually in my department. We receive fine counsel from the Department of Law, but at the end of the day, they have to answer somewhere else.
Follow-up, Senator Faircliffe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that answer. We had some compelling testimony earlier today about a long-standing issue that has been plaguing Alaska for decades concerning allotments. Can you tell me how you are going to resolve at least some of those allotments and how we would prioritize us as a state to be able to accomplish that task?
Through the Chair, Senator Faircliffe, technology today allows us to communicate instantly. And I don't know if Mr. Parsons is still on, but I would ask him if he's already pulled out the files I requested. I can assure you, not only the committee, but anybody who's remains here in the audience, that I'll be taking a personal interest in reviewing the files mentioned by the heirs here today, and then asking for a bigger picture brief on how it is we have been reviewing these particular cases. It certainly is troubling, but I also know that the complications that arise are not the easiest problems in the world to solve, and I know that the solution that Marty mentioned with regard to alternative selections is one that is relatively new, and I'm certain will not be satisfying in each case, particularly where you have decades of a connection to a particular area or parcel. Unfortunately, I'm afraid there's going to be some that you just can't get all the way over. But there's nothing like a personal connection and a personal witness like today to cause a reexamination of our prior decisions, looking for the opportunities where we can right any wrongs that may have passed.
Follow-up, Senator Faircliffe?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate that. And I appreciate Senator Coghill bringing it forward. I just don't know if it's the right approach. It's the right statement, but shall, given what we heard from folks at the department, doesn't get us there if we can't actually have tools, as Senator Dyson suggested, to actually resolve the issues. So I would challenge you, before this bill is heard in the Senate Finance Committee, that we actually have a work plan and that we can try to identify the specific challenges with the transfers on each parcel so that we have a clear understanding of what we could resolve in a 1 to 3 year time period versus a 3 to 5 year time period versus a decade. For there will be different challenges. One that comes up is if it's in existing parkland, at least in my community, it requires a vote of the people to try to exit parkland out, or what do we have to do? So can't we sort some of these cases, prioritize them, and see if we can come up with a way to start moving at least on a few to show good faith that we're looking and that we're trying? So I would hope that that we would at least know some of the issues a little bit better on the at least the 303 parcels that we're looking at, and see somewhere that we can find some success at a little bit, well, not a little bit, at a lot quicker rate than we've seen over the past 100 years. So I know it's a lot to ask a new person coming through, but you've been with the DARP department a long time. I'm sure that you know some of the issues, and just as Senator Coghill places his shoulder to the issue, I hope that you will too.
Senator Dyson, a question?
No, it's a comment. Eisenhower said, don't let the pressing keep you from doing the important. But I don't know, with the oil and gas issues and a couple other ones, how anybody could ask you and your team to take time away from that at this time to work on some of these other things. Working down this backlog and stuff feels to me like a project, not an operating responsibility. And I would encourage you to think about putting together a task force or a SWAT team or something for some finite period, 3-5 years, you know, and approaching us about the money to do it. When the framers were working on it, the first draft was life, liberty, and the protection of real property. And the happiness thing was a compromise. I'm glad to be happy, but without protection of real property, we're in real trouble. And it gets to very high on the list of the valid things for government to do. And when government is kind of standing in the way, you know, it's just a dragon we got to slay. And my support isn't going to mean very much, probably doesn't now, but my guess is my colleagues would be very glad to do whatever necessary. End of lecture and preaching.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki, did you have a question as well?
I do, through the chair. So you're one of the few departments, and I've enjoyed working with you, Commissioner, Mr. Balesh. I find you very capable. I've just kind of noticed how you've marched through increasing levels of responsibility. You've done well. You have a tough job, and in fact, you have your department has its own article in the Constitution, and Article 8. So my question is about balance, okay? So you have terms in your article, if you will, for the greatest value to Alaskans, maximum benefit, sustained yield, maximum use, a lot of that thrown around about the different pieces of Article 8. So habitat, revenue, sustainability, generational value, everyone likes to pick a piece of what they think maximum benefit means. What does maximum benefit mean to Joe Balesh?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, in my estimation, benefits are not finite. They're not temporal in the sense that that benefit accrues today. They're generational, and it's about opportunity. Opportunities don't last forever, however, and I believe there are certain resources we have today that are valuable today but may not necessarily be in 100 years or 200 years. So what I tend to focus on are the solutions. I'm a problem solver and looking for ways to overcome what appear to be diverging forces that try to pull us apart are ultimately challenges that you can many times find a winning solution to. Mm-hmm. Not always, and sometimes you face the tough choice, but as far as the balance question, you know, I think perhaps if I were to talk about the one week of the year that I live for is in September, and it's in the Bristol Bay region. Flying around on a beaver on floats and fly fishing for fall trout. I do it every year, and you know it's a privilege and something special that I hope many people do for a very long time. Making sure that we don't irreparably damage what we have is something that I certainly cherish and look forward to maintaining.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Balesh? All right. I do have two people signed up here to testify, so thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carl Uchtel. Welcome, Carl. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Carl Uchtel. I'm a Juneau resident. I'm also the port director here in Juneau, but I'm testifying as a private resident. But I speak in behalf of the nomination before you, and I'd just like to state that in the job I have now, it's refreshing to work with DNR. My job requires me to work through the permitting process and land conveyance and some of the other federal and other state agencies. It's often a struggle, and I know I have confidence that when I deal with DNR that I'll be treated fairly and that they have CBJ interests and the citizens of Juneau's best interests in mind. In particular, I'd like to speak to Mr. Balesh, and I know him personally, and to the point that it was I know his qualifications, and it's they are remarkable enough for me to take time today to come by and assert my recommendation to this committee that I know him to be fair and a man of sound moral and ethics and a very strong candidate. And I know that he has the intellect to do the job, and I'm just here in his support because I see what DNR is and what they need, and I believe that he has all those qualities. And I encourage your confirmation of Mr. Balesh.
Very good, thank you. Any questions for Carl, committee members? Great. Seeing none, thank you so much for your testimony. Rod Arno is also signed up to testify. Welcome, Rod.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Chairman Giesel and committee members, for the opportunity to testify. I'm Rod Arno. I reside in Palmer, Alaska. I've been either the president or the lobbyist or the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council for the last two decades, and I also sat on the Citizens Advisory Commission on federal areas since it was put back together by Representative Kelly. And the Outdoor Council supports the confirmation of Joe Balesh. That I've been in battle with DNR for the last 20 years through three commissioners. And it's I realize that it's not at the top of the radar of my issues or the people I represent, because people I represent are looking at access to public resources on public lands. And it is a struggle, and in my position with AOC, I go to the Board of Game, the Board of Fisheries, and I constantly are seeing this conflict, and that conflict has a lot to do with the lack of access. So that is why I've been in battle with DNR for such a long time. And I have the greatest confidence in the staff of DNR. I've seen a great turnaround, particularly having dealt with Dan Sullivan as an AG and then having the access to his office in DNR, that I've worked with people that I've been you know, kind of battling with in the past. And Ed Fogles, the deputy commissioner, is a very hard worker. And I think that, you know, the things that we're addressing in Outdoor Council as far as access to the resource, that he's our point man. So very seldom would I, as long as I've dealt with Ed Fogles, have to go to the commissioner. But it's nice having a commissioner who's a homeboy and grew up here. And he knows the importance of that access and the value of our wildlife, our fishing game, the habitat that it's on. So I feel real confident that with the confirmation of Joe Balash as commissioner, that we'll continue the good working relationship we have. And if not, then I'll come back here. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Arno. And even better, the designee spent some time growing up in Fairbanks. That makes him even better, speaking of being a homeboy. Anyone else in the room wish to speak to Joe Balash's appointment as commissioner? All right, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Any further discussion from the committee? Seeing none, in accordance with Article 3, Section 25 of the Alaska Constitution and AS 3905-080, the Resource Committee reviewed the following and recommend the appointment to be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, Joe Balash. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. So at this point, we'll send around a signature document. While that's going on, we'll go on to the next appointee, who is Bruce Twomley, Alaska Commissional Fisheries Entry Commission. Mr. Twomley, if you would come forward, please. Identify yourself for the record and tell us about your relevant experience and interest in the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Bruce Twomley. And I'm very grateful to Governor Parnell for having reappointed me to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. You can see from the paperwork in front of you that I've been at this a while, and that's given me the privilege of participating in the limitation of some 35 fisheries, which has generated a lot of work. We have worked through that, and we're down to a point where we have a manageable caseload before us. I think what I bring to it is the experience means it's work that I can do efficiently. I mean, certainly more than somebody jumping into the task. And I have the opportunity to work with my co-commissioner, Ben Brown, extremely helpful. And what I'm really asking you for is the opportunity to complete work that I began, work that I started. And that's really my goal. I think we have a manageable caseload. There's an opportunity to complete the work from these original cases, and I would like the opportunity to pursue that.
Very good. Questions for Mr. Twomley? All right, seeing none, we have a couple people wishing to testify. The first one is in the Kenai LIO, Paul Shadura. Paul, can you hear us?
Yes, to Chairman Giesel. My name is Paul Shadura. I'm a resident of the Kenai Peninsula. Senator Giesel and members of the Resource Committee. The Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association is a nonprofit 501c6, the largest commercial fishing trade organization representing the 736 Cook Inlet set net permit holders and families who ply the waters of South Central in search of harvestable surplus stocks of salmon. Today, we are very pleased to support the reconfirmation an appointment of Bruce Twomley for a commissioner of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Clearly, Mr. Twomley has served the people of the state and the commercial fisheries participants with merit for three decades. His institutional and historic knowledge is invaluable for the long-term stability of the state's fisheries limited entry system. Considering the extensive list of presentations, publications, and projects that he has piloted or helped direct to stabilize state fisheries, we will continue to need his expertise to assist with solutions to resource challenges in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shadura. Questions for Mr. Shadura? Seeing none, the next person to testify is George Pierce in Kasilof. Mr. Pierce, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please.
My name is George Pierce. I live in Kasilof, Alaska,
and I'm here to testify on the confirmation of these two people here.
We're currently reviewing Mr. Twomley.
Well, right, but I'm not going to be able to stay on to testify for all of them, so I just make my comments now. It's pretty important. It would pertain to all the positions there. Hello, Peter. I'm glad to see you there. First of all, we developed a sport fishing that became dominated by an unlimited commercial guided fishing component that was driven by a demanding tourism market. Also, a power-based initiative by tourism and guide lobbying coalition. With lots of financial resources and influences became the controlling factor in our management.
Mr. Pierce, please limit your testimony to the two appointees that you wish to speak to.
This is pertaining to both. They eventually controlled the entire regulating and management process for the governor of the Board of Fisheries, including the fishing game, DNR commissioners, and their upper-level management. Unethically, it practices run deep here. Second, state and federal agencies responsible for our well-being failed to protect us when we needed to be protected the most. They simply became resolved to the fact that political pressure to support the sport fishing industry had become too great for them to overcome, and they did not have the desire or the will to change the status quo. You know, we just heard a little bit ago, DNR, they don't represent the Alaskans. If you look, the parks are open. The state parks, look at our state parks, they're open in the summer.
Mr. Pierce, I'm going to caution you once again. Either you speak specifically to the appointees or we will have to move on.
I've got 2 minutes to testify, and this is what I'm getting to, ma'am. The legislators stacked the deck, and it's time to change this. You guys are appointing these people to these boards, the commissions, the fish boards. All these boards are being appointed by you. It's time to make a change. You need to appoint people that have science and biology. That's a qualification that must be done. You need to change it away. It says this fish board is eliminating all user groups but the sport fishing guides. Huh. They are, you guys are responsible for doing that.
Pierce, your 2 minutes is up. Would you like to make a concluding statement?
Okay, my concluding statement is, did any one of you people go to the fish and game boards, and are you going to step up to the plate for the Alaskans and change the way this fish board is being nominated? And thank you for my testimony.
Thank you. All right, any further questions or anyone else in the room wishing to testify on Mr. Twomley's appointment? Anyone else online? All right, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Thank you very much, Mr. Twomley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Machiki had a comment.
Thank you. I had it up earlier, but I wasn't obvious enough about it. So okay. Through the chair, Mr. Twomley, I just really want to thank you for your service. And to separate the public testimony, I don't think Mr. Pierce was aware that the first was the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. But I do want to thank you. It's impressive. You were appointed by Governor Hammond. You've served honorably on many incredible projects protecting fishermen and commercial fishermen and their rights through the years through the Entry Commission. And you've had an impressive run, if you will. And I certainly hope that you're confirmed and remain on the board. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Machiki.
Thank you. Any further comments from committee members? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Twomley.
Thank you.
The next person who is appointed, this is for Board of Fisheries, is Frederick Johnson. He is online. Mr. Johnson, can you hear us?
I can, Madam Chair.
Welcome. If you would identify yourself for the record and then review your relevant experience and interest in serving on the board.
Thank you. I will. My name is Fritz Johnson. I Board of Fisheries appointee, designee, from Governor Parnell. My home is in Dillingham, Alaska, in Bristol Bay. Bristol Bay, as you know, is a fish country, and it's been my home since 1979, the year I started fishing here commercially. Every season since then, I've crewed or captained on various boats for salmon, herring, and to a lesser extent, halibut. But my first winter job here was working for the federal census in 1980, when they had the opportunity to travel, virtually every community in the region from Pedro Bay to the Chignecks, and I got to know the region fairly well. I also ran a weekly newspaper here for a dozen years, starting in 1980, and I became, pretty familiar with the whole universe of issues important to the region, fisheries especially. I've worked for various nonprofits in the region, but 5 years ago, I went to work for the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, the region's CDQ group, in a position that's much like the work of the Board of Fisheries, all fish all the time. I am familiar with board processes and procedures, and I hold elected director seats on the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association and our local electric and telephone utility. And I'm ready to make the commitment of time and direction to the Board of Fisheries' constitutional mandates for sustainability of our fisheries while maximizing the opportunity for recreational, commercial, subsistence, and personal use of those resources. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I do note that the United Fishermen of Alaska and the Southeast Alaska Fishermen's Alliance have endorsed both you and Mr. Twombly's appointment. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Johnson? I do have a person online wishing to testify, Paul Shadura in Kasilof. Mr. Shadura?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm in Kenai. I'm not in Kasilof. Senator Giesel, members of the Resource Committee, again, my name is Paul Shadura. I am a resident of the Kenai Peninsula. The Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association has been a voice for the Cook Inlet Setnet commercial fishermen since 1954. Representing some 736 limited entry permit holders, our goal is to be ensuring the sustainability of our fishery resources. Having just completed attending a two-week session of the Alaska Board of Fisheries process, many of our fishing families are in shock and are bearing the scars of the allocation process. Nevertheless, we have been very pleased with the honest, straightforward efforts of interim appointed Bristol Bay Region Board Member Fritz Johnson. Mr. Johnson attempted to improve the process by being approachable to all users. Clearly, his work experience as an editor, publisher, public relations, and regional fisheries program coordinator was pivotal in developing communications. We commend his efforts to correct inequities and deletions in the current Board of Fish process. We look forward to working with Fritz Johnson to further educate board members on the intricate science, historical management, and extensive regulatory structure necessary to fairly structure fisheries management and policy for all Alaskans. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shadura. Questions for Mr. Shadura? Seeing none. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on Mr. Johnson's appointment? Seeing none, is there anyone else online? There is no one else, so I will close public testimony. Further discussion from the committee on either appointees? Yes, Senator Machicki.
I have some comments and a question. And hello, Mr. Johnson. This is Senator Machicki. Just some questions for you. I represent a lot of folks. I represent lodge owners, set netters, personal use fishermen, sport fishermen, and commercial fishermen of every type, having from Kenai to Saldovia in my district. All of those user groups are very important to us, and as Mr. Shadura stated, many in my district are feeling somewhat stung after the recent Board of Fishery meetings. So my question for you, I actually have two questions. One is, first question, Do you feel that all of the current commercial fisheries in the state of Alaska are viable fisheries from what you know today? I understand factors can change in the future, but from what you know today, do you feel that every existing commercial fishery is a viable fishery?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I'd have to ask a question in return. How would you define viable in this sense? That is sustainable? Is that the question?
No, those are different questions. So viable, do you feel that as a Board of Fish commissioner that you are equally in defense of current commercial fisheries as you are those other groups I listed?
Through the chair, Senator, as you know, I'm a new appointee to the board, and I will say that the introduction I've had to the board, its processes, and the various fisheries that I've had an opportunity to learn about in my first seven meetings of the board, I would be remiss in telling you that I am sufficiently familiar with every fishery in the state to be able to really give you a well thought out answer on that. But I will say, after having gone through the first seven meetings that I've attended, I feel much more confident about them now than I did when I began. As you're aware, we have a vast state and a wide variety of fisheries, and I look forward to learning as much as I can about all of them. So I'm not sure that I could really give you a well-considered answer at that point. I have a lot of education to do on this, and I'm under no illusion about that.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Yes, follow-up, Senator Machicki.
Through the chair. That's a reasonable answer, Mr. Johnson. I could have limited it to some geographic areas. So my concern, primarily is that we have board members that are not biased toward any individual group. I'm not sure that's always the case. So that's primarily my concern. My follow-up question, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes, please, Senator Machicki.
Last year, there's a swift learning curve to being a Board of Fish Commissioner, as you stated earlier. There's no question that it's a very complicated process, and my goal is that former mayor of a sport fishing town, someone now who represents many commercial and sport fisheries as well, as that has a balanced approach. But it's a fairly steep learning curve, and we had who I felt was a very capable Board of Fish commissioner that was not confirmed last year. His name was Vince Webster, and I have to say that everyone sitting here voted to confirm Mr. Webster. My question is this, Mr. Johnson. When you consider the fact that people can aggressively come after very hardworking Alaskans, and sort of drag their good names through the mud to help them be not confirmed, can you still answer us as to whether or not you feel you can do your very best without feeling that external pressure to make good decisions for all Alaskans?
Through the chair, Senator, I feel as if I wouldn't be interested in this position if I could not. I'm aware of I know Mr. Webster well, and I'm aware of what happened in his situation, I believe. But I wouldn't be interested in this position if I were going to be in a sense a puppet for any particular any particular interest group or stakeholders.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Further questions for Mr. Johnson? All right, seeing none, in accordance, public testimony has been closed. In accordance with AS 3905-080, the Resource Committee reviewed the following and recommend the appointment be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Bruce Twomley, and Board of Fisheries, Frederick Johnson. It is not the intent. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. Mr. Johnson, thank you very much for meeting with us tonight. This concludes our meeting tonight. Our next meeting is Monday, March 3rd. We will take up SCR 16, requesting the governor to investigate coal resources, and we will hear about Endangered Species Act activities from the Department of Fish and Game. The meeting is now adjourned. The time is 5:25 p.m.